Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day, especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth, you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth, they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth, you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melis.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard to recap the Celtics draft and the Celtics' decision not to chase Jimmy Butler as hard as they could have. The Celtics, you know, some of the backup plans that they might have, or obviously doesn't really seem like the backup plan. Seems like they might have another plan up their sleeves rather than Jimmy Butler, because obviously that was weird to let him go without really trying to get into the conversations with Chicago. So first let's talk about Jason Tatum, the newest Celtics player, number three pick. And I will say this, my first impression of Jason Tatum, seeing him in person, was he's going to need to get stronger. And he's got like a nice frame, big shoulders, but he's not like Jaylen Brown in the sense that he's going to come in and have the level of physicality that a lot of these guys in the NBA do. The thing about him that sets him apart is his skill level. And I think that's what I'm sure sold the Celtics on him, as in addition to the work ethic, the character, all that. But it's the skill level that you look at and makes you kind of say, whoa, like this kid's got a chance to be really damn good.
Yeah, no, I went back and watched all the kind of scouting videos and focusing on Tatum. And first, as an aside, like the strengths and weaknesses videos that Draft Express put out, is like they cannot be the same player. It feels like the weakness videos are so bad and the strength videos make these guys look like all-stars. It's like they just took the very good plays of the year and the very worst plays of the year and only played them, and it's really hard to get a sense of who the player actually is. But as a Celtics fan, let me tell you, the strengths video was a lot more fun to watch. He definitely has a lot of scoring ability and just shot making, creating his own shot in the post. I think you're right. He's kind of a smaller guy. But his length and his athleticism and his skill level will be, it's kind of exactly what the Celtics needed, especially on the second unit, is someone who can kind of create offense on their own. I don't know how much the game is going to, his game of kind of creating from the high post is going to translate into the NBA. And I really think how he's able to shoot from three is going to be a huge kind of marker of where he is and how productive he is. But I think that his shot's there. It looks like he has, I'm not like a shot doctor, but it looks like his mechanics are all right. And so I think there's a high potential for him in the NBA. So I like the pick. I don't buy it that Danny Ainge said they would have taken him at number one. That's classic Danny Ainge talk. I still am more sold on Markelle Fultz as a better prospect, but it feels like Tatum's going to be a nice fit, and there's not a lot of pressure for him to come in and right away and immediately perform, because I don't think the minutes are going to be there for him, because if the Celtics do end up signing someone at small forward, they already have Jay Crowder on the roster. They already have Jaylen Brown. It's unclear of where exactly he's going to get those minutes, but maybe he ends up playing a lot of small ball four, but who knows?
Now, seeing him in person for the first time, I'm a big Duke fan, so I watched a ton of Jason Tatum even before I started my draft prep. So I was kind of familiar with this game. Seeing him in person, though, I wonder if he'll have the physicality to play a small ball four right away. I think he might be more of a three during his rookie season, and then kind of develop into that as he puts on weight and adds more muscle. Because really, like he's not a super strong guy. He's not a thickly muscled guy. So seeing him in person, I do wonder about his ability to play four right away. What's really interesting about this pick to me is, number one, I think he was the most skilled wing in this draft. And this is a good draft. It was a loaded draft. He's the guy with the best footwork, the best array of moves. He was one of the best post scorers in all of college basketball last season, which without being a super, you know, super strong guy. So that goes to show you what types of moves he has, the arsenal of things that he can do. Second part of this pick, which is interesting to me, is that he has some like basketball mindset issues, I think. And like he took too many mid-range jumpers. There are things about his game that he's going to have to need to change to kind of fit into the modern game. And I think the Celtics, by taking him, were saying, okay, here's a guy with all the skills we want, and Brad Stevens can mold this guy into the right habits so that more of those twos become threes, and you know he'll have better shot selection and all those things, because especially during the first half of the season at Duke, those were things he kind of struggled with a little bit. So I think this was a sign that they believe Brad can mold Tatum. I also think like he's an impressive young kid from everybody you talk to. He really is like fully impressive. Like character is A+. Like you talk to people about him, and he's gonna work. He's going to be a really good kid, and that matters to the Celtics. They've made it very clear, you know, that is one of the things that they look for and pay close attention to. What's crazy is he's been working with a professional trainer, professional skills trainer, since he was 14 years old, and he's been working with Drew Hanlon, who was Bradley Beal's trainer, and he actually went to the same high school, I believe, as Bradley Beal. And his mother and Bradley Beal's mother were friendly, I believe. So he's been working with a professional skills trainer, and you can see it in his game. So he's an interesting pick, and I think he and Jalen, you know, over time, and I think even Shimi Oyelaje, I just definitely botched that name.
I was waiting for you to have to say that name.
Yeah, I definitely botched that name. But I think, you know, they're putting together a lot of three, fours, even guys that I think in some cases, especially with Jalen, can play the two and just have tons of versatility. So they're getting long, athletic, young guys who can do a lot of things. And it's exciting that they're putting that kind of stable of players like that together, where just guys who can do a lot of different things and help a team in a lot of different ways on both ends. And I do think, you know, Tatum isn't a great defender yet. He's got a lot of length. I think he has a lot of potential out of that end. You know, some of the time I was watching Duke, and his switchability, like he didn't always stay in front of guards, but he had moments where it was like, wow, this guy can really, really impact point guards when he switches onto them. So there's a lot to like, I think, on both ends of the court. But it's his skill set and the polish offensively that really makes you think, you know, that's what set him apart as a prospect.
Yeah, no, I think the defense and the being able to perform or have potential on both ends is a key point, because in this draft it feels like wing has become the kind of position of greatest need in the NBA, and the place where it's hardest to find a player who can really contribute on both ends of the court. And it felt like Josh Jackson and Tatum were really the two guys who could really come in and be wings who can be on both ends. And watching Tatum, the highlights in college, again, this is only from the strength video, but he had some impressive closeouts and blocks. Sometimes in the weakness videos, he got kind of beat by the point guard, but he does have quicker feet, and the footwork you mentioned, since he's been working with this guy since he's 14, he better have some good footwork. It's his ability, his potential on defense, I think, is another reason why the Celtics draft him. He's not just this kind of offensive chucker. He's a guy who does everything pretty well and has potential to get better. So I can see him and Jalen kind of playing that kind of positionless forward wing spot from years to come, and that's good to say. They're both named Jason and Jalen, the reigning Jays. I think there's things to be we can work with here. So I'm all in on the pick.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, as they got the number three pick, they've got this. I do think he and Jaylen Brown will work really well together. And I think, you know, both those guys are going to be inside-outside threats. I think Jaylen Brown's developing three-point shot was really promising last year. I think Jason Tatum, you know, he shot 85% from the line. I don't think he's going to be a guy who's going to struggle with NBA three-point shooting. He's got a smooth stroke. The free throw shooting is really promising. So, and then they're both really good in the post. So they're going to be, you know, maybe one day when Jaylen Brown kind of develops more ball skills, they're going to be guys who can hurt you in the post, who can hit three-pointers, who can just kind of do a little bit of everything and hurt mismatches and hurt switches. So what they're building is really cool. And they have that underneath, like, the already established core of guys, which is really exciting. And, you know, Jason Tatum, the concerns about him, I think, are he's going to score. Like, he's going to be a good scorer in the league. The concerns I think about him are whether he'll be anything more than a volume scorer, and can he develop a three-point shot? I do think there's a lot of promise there and potential. Can he become a better finisher? I think when he gets more strength, you know, that'll help him. I think he has the length and the skill set to become, you know, a complete scorer, and that's what's exciting about him. So, good pick. It was still a weird draft because, you know, it might be known more in the future for what the Celtics didn't do. And obviously they had a chance to be number one and take the number one overall pick. And I think the trade to move back to three and pick up another piece, I think if Tatum and Fultz end up becoming comparable players, that trade is going to be a big win because the Celtics are going to get probably a lottery pick either next year or the year after. Now, where you'd get in trouble from the Celtics' perspective is if Markelle Fultz is a monster or Lonzo Ball is a monster and they passed on the chance to draft either of those guys to take Tatum, and let's say he becomes like a solid pro and there's a huge gap there. That's how the Celtics will get in trouble with that trade. I still don't know what to think about the trade. Obviously, we haven't seen these guys play a second yet. Celtics, I'm not sure I buy either that they would have drafted Tatum at number one, but I think it's obvious from the trade that they didn't think there was a huge gap and that they think Tatum and Fultz were very comparable prospects and that they were okay with getting a guy who maybe they didn't have number one on their board, but they had two or three. And they were okay with that because they don't think there's a huge gap there. And I guess we'll see. But still a weird draft. And then you go to the Jimmy Butler thing where Minnesota, like, they stole him for pretty cheap. I don't want to say it's almost nothing because, you know, the seventh pick this year and then two lottery picks from the last two drafts or two of the last three drafts. So they gave up a lot of, like, talented young guys. Minnesota did, but you have to think the Celtics could have come in with a much better offer if they really wanted Jimmy Butler.
Yeah, no, it sounds like the Celtics just really didn't want Jimmy Butler. Ainge, I believe, said that they hadn't really been engaged on those talks on those front for a while. And it's difficult having to see, like, so much interest in him previously. It kind of doesn't exactly make sense. Maybe there's a concern that if they're bringing in Gordon Hayward, him and Jimmy Butler would be completely redundant. It's difficult to see what the Celtics are thinking at this point because it feels like all of their offseason is predicated on what they do in free agency, and that's kind of informing their decisions now. We heard the rumors about Paul George as well, and it feels like everything's kind of predicated upon whether or not they sign Gordon Hayward or someone like Blake Griffin. The Celtics could have definitely beat that offer. Maybe the Bulls were asking for too much because it was the Celtics, or maybe the Bulls were just really obsessed with Chris Dunn because they've wanted him for 2 years, or maybe the Bulls are just one of the most incompetent front offices in all of sports. It could be a mixture of all of those things. But you're right. It feels weird that the Celtics weren't at all kind of engaged in kind of trade talks, or that the Bulls wouldn't go to them. But that just points to me that Danny Ainge wanted no part of Jimmy Butler, which doesn't exactly make a lot of sense to me, since I think Jimmy Butler's a very solid player who can help this team. But maybe if the move was just wait to see what can happen at free agency, and maybe you could give up less for a player like Paul George, who I think is better than Jimmy Butler, or you can just sign someone like Gordon Hayward and not give up anything. It could have just been a timing thing where at this point they weren't going to do that because they have better options where they could give up less later.
Yeah, I've heard the Celtics didn't put the number three pick or next year's Nets pick on the table for Jimmy Butler in this round of negotiations, where in the past it has been reported that they did. And so it's interesting to me that they backed off. And I do think, like, they're acting like a team that believes it can do something else. Because, you know, this is really – they have this window right now where they have cap space. And it's not going to be there in the future. Like, this is the last year that they can go out and go after a max free agent, and that they'll have the flexibility to do that before everybody on their roster becomes more expensive. And so there's, like, pressure on them to come up with a big deal, like adding Jimmy Butler or adding – somebody else. So the fact that they didn't go after him hard, especially after they've done that in the past, is it makes you think that maybe they're very confident about going after somebody else and landing somebody else, and that they could do it without losing as many assets. Because, you know, Jimmy Butler, even though Minnesota's offer wasn't great, that's probably more than what Paul George would go for. Because Paul George has put the Indiana Pacers in an awful situation where everybody knows he wants out. Everybody knows in 1 year the Los Angeles Lakers loom as this huge threat. So they don't really have any negotiating leverage, the Indiana. So it's possible that the Celtics, you know, have talked to Indiana and believe that they can go get Paul George for, you know, two future picks, let's say like the Memphis and the Clippers pick, and like Jay Crowder and Avery Bradley or something like that, you know, and that it would be less than they would have had to give up for Jimmy Butler. And maybe that's the case. Maybe it's not. And then there's obviously also Gordon Hayward, Blake Griffin as free agents. And if you get one of those guys, you don't have to give up. I mean, you still have to give up some things toward the end of the roster, because Celtics don't have outright max cap space right now, but it's a lot easier to stomach getting a guy like that without losing any of your future draft picks if you can go out and get somebody like that and then keep all these, you know, lottery picks. Then it would be just a really impressive summer. So I think right now my grade on the draft is, like, incomplete, because we don't know what's coming next.
And that's what it should be for every grade of the draft, because there's no way to know what these players are going to turn into. But that's an entirely separate rant.
So true. So true. And what bothers me about the draft, too, is how much groupthink there is. Like everyone believes the same thing about these prospects because everyone just reads Draft Express, or like watches Draft Express strengths videos and weaknesses videos, and nobody really formulates their own opinions. There are like three different people who formulate their own opinions in the entire internet, and then everyone else is just kind of copying off them. So we'll see. I'm incomplete for me, and I say that while thinking that Tatum's going to be at least a good player, and I say that while thinking, like, there's just got to be something else. And if there's not, then losing Jimmy Butler and doing nothing to get Jimmy Butler just feels really weird to me. If there is something else and you get Hayward or George, or both Hayward and George, although that would be like an astronomical price to keep the roster together, if you can get at least one of those guys, then it looks a lot better that you didn't go after Jimmy Butler. If the Celtics whiff on those guys, and I mean, they'll still have a really good team next year. They'll still be one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, but it just feels like really a missed opportunity if they didn't go after Butler when he was there to be had. Like, I think if they put the number three pick on the table, he's theirs. Like, right now, Jimmy Butler is playing for the Boston Celtics, but they decided against it. And so now we'll see what Danny Ainge has next.
Yeah. The latest rumor of trying to get Paul George and Gordon Hayward, I know that it's people have worked it out and that it's possible for the Celtics to kind of trade for George right after signing Hayward. I just don't think it's something that the Celtics are going to do, because then you're committing so much money to only three players, and then you'd have to either in this world you'd re-sign and or renegotiate and extend Paul George. Oh, then there's this whole Isaiah Thomas person who's going to be coming up a free agency. And you'd basically have $100 million in four contracts, and you'd have a bunch of guys on the rookie scale and may be able to work, but it just doesn't seem like something that's feasible. I feel like it's an either-or option, and I'm heavily influenced by the article by Danger Cart, where it feels like they have a max cap space where they can either realistically spend that on Gordon Hayward and not really give up that much, or they could try and trade a few pieces and trade Paul George into that cap space without really having to give up as much in terms of salary. But it feels like those are the two options that make more sense. You don't really want to have to give up picks or rotation players. So I think that it's an either-or scenario. And for me, I think Paul George would be a better player. I think he is a better player than Gordon Hayward, but the whole question of whether or not you can get him to renegotiate makes things kind of more problematic, because I think it would be a hell of a fun season if you bring in Paul George for 1 year. His ability to do everything that Paul George does, but including just like defend LeBron James, would make things in the East a lot more interesting. So I guess in order of preference, I would say trade for George and renegotiate and extend, then sign Hayward, and then would be just trade for George for a rental. But given all those options, it feels like things are going to get very interesting right around July 1 with seeing in which direction the Celtics go. Because it sounds like, and if we trust the reporting of a friend of the program, Adam Kaufman, it sounds like they already have a kind of the structure of a deal in place for George. And it's all these contingencies based on what happens in free agency. And even though the Celtics are operating as if a team that's very confident they're going to sign Gordon Hayward, you never know with these type of things. And I still think there's a pretty good chance that he goes back to Utah. So it's good that they have this contingency plan in place. But you're right. They're operating like a team that's very confident they can add a star on July 1.
Yeah, and without giving up as much as they would have for Butler is, I think, the key part of that, because – you know, Jimmy Butler's a really good player. Jimmy Butler was probably top 10 or top 12 player in the league this year. He had a better year than Paul George. I think he had a better year than Gordon Hayward. Like, he had a really great year. He plays two ways. He's tough. He works hard. It's tough to pass on a guy like that unless you think you have another alternative that won't cost you as much as it would to take in Jimmy Butler. One thing about the renegotiate and extend possibility that people have floated on Twitter with Paul George, Celtics have to be really careful with that, I think, because if you do that and you use that cap space to renegotiate Paul George instead of Isaiah Thomas, who's already on the roster and who is also up for renegotiation and extension, he could be pissed off. And he's also a free agent in 1 year, like Paul George is. So, like, that's a careful situation you have to navigate. And I know he's gone on the record and said he wants the Celtics to bring in a star. But it's one thing to, like, go out and get a free agent who's not under contract. It's another to offer somebody else who's under the same contract situation as Isaiah Thomas the renegotiation that could have been his. So that's a tricky situation, I think, for the Celtics to navigate. I don't know what Isaiah Thomas would think about that. I have no idea what his personal mentality is. The other thing is the Isaiah Thomas injury news is kind of getting weird. It's dragged on a lot longer than I think anyone anticipated. Danny Ainge said the Celtics fully expect that he'll be ready for training camp. But at this point, it's like, it's been how long since the season? Like almost a month and a half. And he was supposed to figure out in 2 weeks whether he'd need surgery. And now it's a month and a half later. He still doesn't know. So
I thought the report was that if he's going to be back by training camp, wouldn't that signal that he's probably not getting surgery?
Yeah, but both Danny Ainge and Brad Stevens have said that Isaiah doesn't know yet whether he's getting surgery, and they're going to reevaluate him in a couple of weeks to see what the deal is there. So I would imagine that he's leaning against surgery, and that, you know, it's pretty likely that he won't have surgery. But it's just, when you're talking about a hip injury, and when you're talking about somebody who's 5'9", and it's dragging on this long, like, hopefully he's okay, and it won't hinder him, and it won't impact him into next season.
I mean, Isaiah himself doesn't seem too concerned because he still had enough confidence to get butt-ass naked and pose for the ESPN The Body issue.
He did get butt-ass naked. I didn't expect to wake up and see a butt crack, Isaiah Thomas's butt crack, in the morning. But sometimes you just see a butt crack.
Sometimes you see a butt crack, and it's just the way you live life. There's a new gif today of him doing a behind-the-back pass jump where he strategically blocks his bits with his thigh. I thought that was some impressive stuff, too. And then he has this whole, like, Zeke-end this weekend, a bunch of stars going out. You see everyone on Celtic social media, Kelly Olynyk, Terry Rozier's out there. I didn't see any images of Isaiah actually playing in any of the games. And you know, if he'd probably like to, like, throw up 60 in his own kind of weekend. So that seems like he's still recovering from something. But I would agree with you. It's weird that he doesn't have – we don't know about the surgery thing, but it seems like if they expect him in training camp, I don't think surgery would necessarily happen. But you're right. It's something to keep an eye on definitely as the offseason progresses.
Yeah, just another variable. And, I mean, no matter what happens the rest of the summer, Celtics are still in a really good place. But, I don't know, it's the more times Danny Ainge passes on a deal, it's kind of – you kind of start to wonder, like, when is he going to make the move? And maybe it's coming very soon, and I suspect that they do have confidence that they'll make a move for a star. But, you know, it would be nice to capitalize this summer, really nice to capitalize this summer when they do have the cap space and, you know, those assets are still all really good. So it would be nice, and it would be crazy. It would be totally insane to be able to add Gordon Hayward to this core and not have to lose much to the core, or it'd be totally insane to be able to trade for Paul George without losing, like, any of your lottery picks, and having that extra star aboard and still having all the future lottery picks, whether it's Brooklyn or from L.A., Sacramento, Philly, that one that will either come next year or the year after. So they're in a position right now where it's possible they could pick up another star player and still have all of these draft picks and get, you know, take another step forward without touching all of their assets. So they're still in a great position, and especially if they can get, like you said, Hayward or George or Griffin. Griffin's another guy that they could potentially go after. So we'll see. Again, incomplete, man. Incomplete. We got Jay Crowder pissed off on Twitter. People are brutal to Jay Crowder on Twitter, man.
It directly to him. Like, I've seen it, like, in the Celtics Twitter just talking about, like, potential trades and stuff like that. But then there's just other people who are, like, adding him. He's like, get the fuck out of town, Jay. Pack your bags. It's very aggressive. And it's like they – it's almost like people on the internet are just kind of operating and now don't understand that their words have some sort of consequence, and they're, like, much more free to say things they wouldn't say in public. It's a weird world.
Yeah, so he was liking a lot of tweets saying he should get traded or that the Celtics should do something with him or that he was just not good at basketball. And it's crazy because he is a valuable player. He's a two-way player, plays defense, shoots, hits threes. Like, he's a tough player who emerged for the Celtics. The type of guy, like, Celtics fans should really appreciate because of how hard he works and how much he's done to emerge as a starting caliber player. But people are brutal to him, saying that Shimmy's the obvious Jay Crowder replacement. Shimmy Oyuwaze, whatever his name is, man.
We're going to have you say Shimmy's name for every single podcast.
It's actually Shimmy. I know it is Shimmy.
It's Shimmy.
Shimmy. Yeah, he was named after Antoine Walker. That's a joke for you people out there. A very bad joke. But yeah, Shimmy's another guy to be excited about, I think. Shimmy for a second round pick really, I believe, adds value to the Celtics. He's an intriguing second rounder because I think he can play small ball four. He can play the three. He's got a 42-inch vertical. He's 6'6 with a 6'9 wingspan. And he's 240-something pounds. Like, just a huge, enormous guy who can move. So I'm on the Shimmy train.
Any train that can draft a guy who's built like a defensive end in football, who can jump 42 inches in the air, I think you got to do it. To get in the second round, I'm excited. The Celtics Summer League roster is panning out. It should look should be a lot of fun. That's the big if here is if Ante Zizic can get his visa issues worked out because
There is no visa issue. So that was funny because Danny Ainge said there was a visa issue. And then 2 seconds later, Mike Zarin was like, there is no visa issue. I don't know what Danny was thinking about, but there is no visa issue. And so Danny was just mistaken or whatever. Zarin said that Austin Ainge even texted him to see if there was a visa issue, and there just isn't. So that's funny. It sounds like Zizic will likely play for the Celtics, although he is under contract overseas, so they have to work some things out with that. But it does sound like he will likely play for the Celtics Summer League roster. I feel a little bad, though, for Abdel Nader. Because Abdel Nader played great in the D League. He was the D League Rookie of the Year. He waited his time. Like, he could have made more money, could have gone somewhere else, played for the Maine Red Claws, had a great season, and now he's going to go into Summer League with, you know, Jason Tatum and Shimmy Oya whatever, and Jaylen Brown,
too.
And, like, just all types of wings who the Celtics are going to want to play a lot of minutes. And then poor Nader, like, it might be tougher for him to get minutes than he probably anticipated with all the wings that the Celtics have amassed.
You know, he's just going to have to come back and prove it in Summer League. That's what you want in your Summer League roster, some healthy competition on that at the wing position. And I'm just saying that as someone who's already bought my tickets to Vegas and plan on watching a lot of this, you know, 15th player on the roster competition. I think it's going to be exciting stuff.
Shimmy and Jaylen could be like the Bash Brothers of Summer League. Like, those are two big, strong wings and athletic wings. They could have a fun Summer League team, man.
I mean, with Zizic in there, Demetrius Jackson's a fun little guard. The only thing is they're not going to get Terry Rozier to play. He's out. And Summer League Terry Rozier, we know, is fantastic, but he feels like he's graduated to be on Summer League.
RIP Summer League Terry Rozier. It was a good run. It was a great run.
Well, he basically evolved into playoff Terry Rozier, and I'll take that trade any day of the week.
Yeah, it's too bad Gershon Yabusele will not be healthy too. He although apparently he is ahead of schedule, slightly ahead of schedule, in his recovery from surgery to remove bone spurs from his feet or ankles, one or the other. So, good news on Yabu. He'll be back strong, and yeah, summer league should be fun. I'm really excited. I get way too excited for summer league because, like, this time of year is the worst time of year where there's no basketball to watch anywhere. And I know the Big Three is going to be on TV tomorrow on tape delay, but I don't want to watch totally washed up guys. I want to watch young guys with a little bit of potential and all types of question marks. That's what I want to see. I want to see summer league. I'm ready to watch real basketball again, even if it's not even real basketball, even if it's summer league basketball. I'm in. I need it. I need it in my life. So
I don't want to watch White Chocolate like hurt himself. I don't want to watch stars of yesteryear, so not even stars, average players from yesteryear hurt their hip and just get injury after injury in the Big Three. I'm out on the Big Three already. It just I was never that sold on the idea. I mean, maybe if it was White Chocolate in his prime, but I just don't want to see old guys get hurt. That's no fun.
I kind of like seeing old guys get hurt, man. Because then it makes me feel okay. Because every time I play these days, I hurt my knee. And I can barely walk for like 2 days afterwards. I just have to limp everywhere. So when Jason Williams goes out and it's the same thing for him, or when Corey Maggette goes out there and it's the same thing for him, I can talk myself into feeling like a professional athlete. So,
hey man, whatever gets you to sleep at night and gets you through the day, you got to make excuses. You got to tell yourself something. So if it's good for you, Jay King, I support you watching the Big Three.
I am fully washed, man. So washed up. It's horrendous. I played in a tournament today, 3-on-3 tournament with my brothers. We had won it the past 2 years. I let us down this year. I let us down. We didn't end up winning. It was the first loss the King family has ever taken as a full brother group, which is tough. You know, we had our reputation to uphold. We had our perfect record to uphold. And really, it was my fault. I'm just so washed. I used to be a difference maker in the right way, and now I'm a difference maker in all the wrong ways. So, sorry to my brothers. If they listen to this, I just want them to know I'm deeply sorry for my performance today. It was embarrassing.
That's tough. That's tough to hear. But hopefully you can rebound. I don't know. You are pretty washed, so I don't know how it improves from this point.
I would still get buckets on you, though. I would still get buckets on you. We got to do a 2-on-2 tournament, or we got to do some sort of game with the Rain and Jays podcast host, and bring on some challengers. See if
that'll
Bobby
be fun
Manning
because
wants to mount a challenge.
Oh, Bobby Manning's not even in the conversation. He never played basketball in his life.
yeah, we should figure that out, but that's it. That's a good place to end. We're starting to ramble about our washed upness.
Oh, there's one more thing I wanted to talk about.
We got one more.
Was Josh Jackson making the Celtics brass fly all the way to Sacramento and canceling the workout mid-flight? Some rumblings out there that's basically like the Suns asked him to do it or made him do it, maybe a little salty over the Isaiah Thomas trade, but just not like a real professional move there from Josh Jackson. But then I thought it was funny that I think Danny Ainge was talking about it, and he's saying, I was in town with Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin in Sacramento. There was no way we were going to have an exciting evening. And I couldn't agree more. As someone who's been to Sacramento, let me tell you, not much going on downtown. I know they just opened up a new arena. I was there before the new arena opened up. But Sacramento, kind of a ghost town. I went to a bar there, and they had a mermaid swimming above the bar in a pool. That was pretty much the highlight of the trip.
Hold on. You saw a mermaid swimming above a bar, and you're disappointed?
It wasn't
like
the coolest mermaid.
Merman, Pop. Merman.
I would have been more excited for a merman, I guess, so I could have yelled that. But let me tell you, weird move by Josh Jackson, but let me ask you this. If you could go to any NBA city with Brad Stevens and Mike Zarin, where would you go?
I'm a big – so give me warm weather most of the time, but I like laid-back cities. Like, I'm a big Indianapolis guy.
If you go to Indianapolis with Brad Stevens, you'll dine like a king.
Yeah, that is true. That would be another perk. I didn't even think about that. Chicago is a nice place to go. Miami, just because it's warm. Although Miami is too much for me, man. I can't deal with that lifestyle.
I don't think you, Brad Stevens, and Mike Zarin are getting into the clubs if you're going to Miami.
I don't know. Brad might be a wild man. But, yeah, that Josh Jackson thing, it was weird, man. Like, apparently that was the first time the Celtics guys had ever flown cross-country for a workout just to have it canceled. And, yeah, maybe the Suns, like, promised him that they'd take him at 4, and it was a better situation than Boston because Boston doesn't have a lot of opportunity for him minutes-wise. Who knows? Who knows what the driver was behind that? Normally that's all due to the agent, so it's tough to blame a kid for that. But Ainge was definitely pissed about that. Ainge was very irritated that he flew to Sacramento and didn't even get to meet Josh Jackson. Like, they weren't even allowed to talk to him. They tried to get breakfast with him the next morning and were declined. So he wouldn't work out. He wouldn't see them. Nothing. So maybe it was the Suns. Maybe Ryan McDonough pulling a fast one on his old boss. But, yeah.
I feel like Josh Jackson's on that enemies list, like Steve Buscemi in Billy Madison. Like, he's on the guys to kill later list.
Man, I'm glad I called that guy. Yeah, he will be certainly someone that Ainge probably wants to defeat. Although Ainge said he likes Josh Jackson as a person, or from everything he's heard, he thinks Josh Jackson is a really good kid. And a lot of it is just agent driven, and the players don't really have too much say in it. So definitely a poorly handled situation, but it's tough to blame Josh Jackson. Anyway. That's it for this episode. If you want to listen to us, search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get podcasts, iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher, wherever else you get podcasts. Subscribe to us. Give us a 5-star rating. We could use those. We'd like those. We'd love those. So please do that. Anyway, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. That's it for this episode of Locked On Celtics Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Yeah, J. King and John Corrales, Locked On Celtics, Millies.
Napa Know-How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.